All right, let's go. Let's get serious over here. Right, I want to talk a bit about, again, I want to introduce the topic from the parsha, and then I want to get into a little bit what I want to talk about. We are introducing this week's parsha, Parsha's Toldos, to Esav and Yaakov. And when you introduce the first time we meet certain people in Tanakh, you look at how the Pesukim describe them. I think when you look at Yaakov and Esav, you will see two very, very, very clear and opposing archetypes. Esav is described to us as being hairy when it comes out of the womb. The word Esav, the name Esav, comes from the word asui. He is kind of ready-made. He already has a mature look to him. He is asui. He is red in his color and his pigmentation, which implies a certain passion, perhaps a physicality, that inheres in his personality. He is a pleasure seeker. We know his profession is that of a hunter. He is a man of action, of passion. He is not someone who's necessarily growth-oriented because he's asui. He's a ready-made person. He is hairy. He is who he is. And that is the introduction that we have to Esav in the beginning psukim. Vayetze rishon admoni, kulo kaderes se'ar, v'yikrushimo Esav. And then his brother comes along. And Yaakov comes along, and we have Yaakov. First of all, the very name Yaakov is in a future tense, is Lashon Atid, Yaakov. And we're told as he comes out of the womb, Esav comes out first, but Yaakov lunges. He reaches. He is a striver. He is looking to get ahead, if you will. His profession, unlike Esav, who is a hunter, he is a ro'etzon. The very definition of being a ro'etzon means a greater sense of, he's more deliberate. He's not a man of action. It's a more docile type of profession, if you will, perhaps more reflective, more deliberative. And when we have our description of Yaakov, he is described in contrast to Esav as Yaakov Ishtam Yosef Ohalim. He is Tam. He is a pure, pristine Yosef Ohalim. And Yosef Ohalim implies he's sitting in the base medrash. And when we consider where Esav is heading and where Yaakov is heading, Yaakov is, again, future-looking. Esav is who he is. And this reflects itself perhaps even more so in the first story that we're told about these protagonists, these brothers. Yaakov is preparing a nezid adashim. He's preparing some food. Vayavo Esav in asadeh v'hu ayef. Esav comes from the field and he's exhausted. Vayomer Esav Yaakov. And Esav tells Yaakov, haliteini no min adom adom azeh. Pour for me, no, does not mean please. It means pour for me now, down my throat, from that food, ki ayef anochi, because I'm tired, I'm hungry, I want food. Vayomer Yaakov, and Yaakov says, I'll give you food. I'll give you this ochel, however, on a condition, michra hakayom es bechorasa li. I would like your bechora. And Esav says, what do I need the bechora for? I'm destined to die, the destiny of all of mankind. Why do I need the Bechora? Yaakov says, you'll give me a shvua that the Bechora is mine? He says, yes. And Yaakov gives him this porridge, this food, the chulent. And listen to this pasuk. And what does Esav do? Vayochal bayesht, vayokam bayelech, vayivez Esav, Esav es ha-Bechora. To my knowledge, the only time in Chumash that you have five verbs consecutive. He eats, he drinks, he gets up, he goes out, and he abuses the Bechor. Esav is the paradigmatic man of action. But in his action, in his aggressiveness, in his passions, he seems to give up on his future. He sees food, he's hungry, he wants it. And he's willing to go ahead and sacrifice the Bechorah, his legacy, for a good bowl of chulent. Yaakov, on the other hand, sees a little beyond. He's future-focused. And yes, he's willing to give up some of this physicality, some of this dinner, in order to go ahead and get something in the future that is far greater and far of more significance. And that highlights the essence of what is Yaakov and what is Esav, which begs the question, therefore, what is it that Yitzchak saw in Esav? Because the pasuk tells us, and it's a striking pasuk, Vayehav Yitzchak es Esav, Kitzayit Befiv, V'Rivka Oheves es Yaakov. Yitzchak loves Esav because he's a hunter, and Rivka loves Yaakov unconditionally. There's an asymmetry in that pasuk. Yitzchak loves Esav for a reason, Kitzayit Befiv. V'Rivka unconditionally Oheves es Yaakov. What exactly, Mr. Brooks, what exactly was the attraction that Yitzchak has to Esav? What drew him to Esav? What exactly was that all about? And I have a theory. I've not seen this in any of the Mefarshim. My theory, you could take it or leave it. But my theory is as follows. Yitzchak looked at his father. And in his father, Abraham, he saw a Renaissance man. He saw an iconoclast. He saw someone who did it all. He was the first monotheist. He finds God. He was a warrior. He was a Makare. He was Achnasas Orchim. He was everything. A man of the world and a man of God. Yitzchak, if we study Yitzchak carefully, you will see and you will note that Yitzchak is out of this world. He is a man of God exclusively, pure spirituality. Perhaps at the Akedah, Chazal tell us, he was already an Ola Tmima, couldn't leave Eretz Yisrael. He is a miracle child from birth, named by God, the only one of the Avos, named by Hashem, and so intensely spiritual. When Rivka sees him, for the first time she falls off her camel, blown away by the intensity of his tefillah. So now Yitzchak has two sons. A Yaakov Ishtam Yosef O'alim and an Esav, a man of the world. And Yitzchak understands that the next Av is going to be the father of Yud Beis Shvatim. So who is going to be the heir apparent? Who is going to be the third Av, the one that's going to kind of put it all together? He sees in Yaakov Ishtam Yosef O'alim perhaps his alter ego, Yitzchak 2.0. And perhaps he sees an Esav, a man of the world, a man who has passion, who's a doer. Perhaps he sees in Esav, perhaps a potential, another Avram Avinu. And therefore, specifically by Yehav, Yitzchak is Esav, Ki Tzayit Befiv, because he was a hunter. He saw something in that. Now, did Yitzchak make a tragic mistake, yes or no? Was he wrong, yes or no? So he was wrong. He thought it was Esav, but he was right. The next Av was going to have to be a man of the world, was going to have to deal with tremendous challenges in this world and overcome them. Challenges with a loved one, challenges with having his daughter raped, challenges with four wives, 12 sons, a lost Yosef. Challenges every step of the way. An Avram-like figure, yes. But indeed, it was going to emerge as Yaakov. And in fact, when all is said and done, Yaakov is going to get everything Esav was supposed to get, plus everything Yaakov is supposed to get. He's getting the spiritual bracha of Yaakov and the physical bracha of Esav. It's all going to land in Yaakov. He's going to get the wife that was destined for Esav, Leah. It's going to become Yaakov's wife. He's going to dream about ladders and angels, heaven and earth, spirituality and physicality, all coming together, merging, if you will, the physicality of Esav with the spirituality of Yitzchak, and that is Yaakov. And it all comes together in what we'll read in this parasha, HaKol Kol Yaakov, Vayadayim Yedei Esav. The hands of Esav and the kol of Yaakov all will merge together in Yaakov. So how did Yaakov pull this off? And this is where it's going to become relevant to every single one of us. I would like to posit and suggest, to become Yaakov, the emergent Yaakov, who will overcome Laban's of the world, who will successfully deal with Shechem, who will successfully navigate losing his son Yosef, being reunited with Yosef and all of the rest. To accomplish that goal and to achieve that success as an adult, it had to be built on the foundations of Yaakov Ish Tam Yosef Oli. The fact that he spent 20 years in Yeshivat Shem Ve'ever, forging his core foundation, that's what enabled him to become Yaakov Avinu. And what I'd like to talk about a little bit is what yeshiva years are meant to be, and what it's all about, and really the paradigm that is Yaakov, who is the Yaakov Ish Tam Yosef Olim, but then that's what enables him to go forward. And I'm going to talk a little bit, this is my T4 opportunity, I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, because I want you to get to know me a little bit. Some of you know me, some of you don't know me, a little bit about my story, how I got to where I am today, and then I want to share with you some thoughts from an amazing, amazing book, Ben Torah for Life, written by Hagon Rav Aaron Lopiansky. But first, I want to talk about the Isaacson story a little bit. So I'm a graduate of the Marshall Stern Talmudic Academy, that very, very chassid institution in the Heights. And I went to Israel for a year. Back in those days, there were 5 yeshivot out there that catered to our world. I applied to 2. I got rejected by 1. I got accepted by the other, so I went to the other one. Great. Spent a year and a half in yeshiva. Wanted to spend 2 years, but parents are parents. So I got a year and a half in yeshiva, and then I went to Yeshiva University. Now, when I was in yeshiva, as I mentioned last sicha, I was pretty serious. I wasn't serious in the beginning. It took a little time for me to get into it. I think I told some of you this story, but I had a close friend in... I told all of you? My close friend, what? Ashir. I told... I had a close friend, and in the beginning of the year, we didn't do much together. We didn't do much together. Which is okay to do nothing together with someone. But then he decided, with a little bit of a nudge, he decided to go to another yeshiva. And now I was all by myself. And that was the best thing in the world. No friends. And I was in this yeshiva. And like, so what are you going to do? So the answer is you start to make friends. And you start to talk to other people. And you start to learn with other people. And all of a sudden, like, I started getting into it. I'm getting very into it. Very into it. And I decided pre-COVID to put myself into quarantine. Volitional quarantine. Where I basically did not leave the yeshiva for about a stretch of 9-10 weeks. Volitional quarantine. This was pre-cell phone, as you know, so I didn't communicate with any of my friends. They thought I was not living anymore. And that was it. I was locked and loaded in yeshiva. And I had a policy, my own policy. I enjoyed my meals in the yeshiva, but basically I did not go back to my dorm room. I left the dorms in the morning for shacharis, and I would see my dorm again at 1 o'clock at night. I did not go back to the dorm in the middle of the day. I spent my relaxing time was at the meals, and then basically dorm. Davening, breakfast, base medrash, lunch, base medrash, dinner, base medrash, 1 o'clock at night. That was the Seder Hayom. And I was in quarantine. And you know what? It was geschmack. I enjoyed myself. I was very, very into it. I flipped out, as they say. And then, after my year and a half, I went to YU. And I wanted to stay 2 years, so I decided I'm still shun a bet. But I decided, okay, my shun a bet now is not going to be in Israel. It's going to be in YU. So I tried as much as I could to sustain the same more or less schedules I had in yeshiva, more or less. I did a little college there. But I tried to sustain same learning type of intensity. And Baruch Hashem, I took college seriously, believe it or not. I wanted to get an education, and I valued education, and I took my learning very seriously as well. I was doing well in YU, and I decided after trying to major in engineering, that did not work out. All the math and science guys, especially the math guys, were really smart, and I did not cut it with them. So I decided to major in philosophy, which is much easier. And then I went, if you major in philosophy, what are you going to do with that? The answer is, you apply to law school. That's what I did, and I applied to law school. And I wanted to go to one or two schools. That's my story of my life. I applied to two places, get rejected by one, get accepted by the other, and that worked out okay. So I went to this place called the New York University School of Law, downtown Manhattan, and that's where I went to law school. At that time, as a senior in college, I met my Eshes Chayil, my beloved. We dated for a while. Won't go into that right now. That's for another time. And then I went to law school, got married after my first year of law school, finished law school, learned in law school too, did law, got good summer jobs, all that, whatever, that's not important for now. And then I finished law school. What did I do after I finished law school? I had a job at a major New York City law firm, but I asked them, can I please take a year to go? I told them I was going to clerk for a judge, which was not a lie. I was clerking for a chashuv judge in Israel, but I was basically coming to Israel to learn. I decided I wanted to learn another year before I joined the rat race. So I went to Israel, learned, worked, clerked for this judge. That's what I told the law firm. They were impressed with that. Well, that's very chashuv. And I learned, and I had a great year learning. My wife was learning. We had a kid. Gevaldik. Something always drew me back to the Beis Medrash. Something always drew me back to Eretz Yisrael. There was something that happened in that year and a half in yeshiva. Something always pulled me back. So I took that year off. And then, the precursor of Mevaseret was out in Gilo. The Rosh Yeshiva was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Mevaseret. This yeshiva became Mevaseret. And I was there for a year. I had a great year. He asked me, would you want to stay for another year? I said, I would, but I'm not. Because the law firm is waiting for me. Benjamins are waiting for me. It's time to make a parnasa. And so I went to work. What was the name of the firm? It's very important. Name of the firm is very important. What? Right. Oh, you remember this story. So I went, the firm is called Weil, Gottschall, and Manges. It's very important. Weil, Gottschall, and Manges. Okay? At the time, third biggest firm in New York City. Now, why is it an important name? Weil, Gottschall, and Manges, because they had a nickname. Don't do this. Don't do this. Not fair. So the nickname is, or was, probably is still, while they gotcha, they mangle you. Why is that the nickname? Because big law firms like this, especially this one, are known to be sweatshops. What do you mean by sweatshops? They pay you a nice salary. They give you a nice annual salary, but there's no such thing as bonuses in these firms. So you get a nice annual salary, but when you calculate it by how much they're paying you by the hour, it turns out to be a little above minimum wage because you're putting in ridiculous hours. You're working 80, 90, 100 hours a week. So you make a nice annual salary, but you're really, really working like a dog. And they call their firm Weil, Gottschall & Manges. Okay, so I'm going to Weil, Gottschall. Why do I go to Weil, Gottschall? Because there are reasons. Not important for this story. Okay, I go to Weil, Gottschall. Now, my wife, when I got married to her, she, as a part of the deal, part of the deal, under the chuppah, and she said, you remember the deal? I said, yes, I remember the deal. So as I give her the ring, I say, Hareyat mikudeshes li b'tabazu, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, about to put the ring on her finger, and she says to me, you remember the deal? I said, yes. She says, so say it. I said, okay. Almenas Shena'ale le'eretz Yisrael lifnei sheha yelet ha'bechor shelanu tagia l'kita aleph. That was the tznai. Tznai in the kiddush. That we make aliyah before our oldest child goes into first grade. I was smitten. I was in love. So I went with the tznai. And we got married. And Baruch Hashem, living happily ever after. But that's not the story. So Aliyah is in the cards. It's not in the Kiddushin, it's in the cards. Now I have a problem. I go to Wild Gottschall, and they tell me, what department do you want to work in? Now, I clearly want to work in the tax department. And the reason is because the tax department, A, has a lot of front people, B, is a family-oriented, family-friendly department, nice people, and does not work crazy hours. So I want the tax department. There's only one problem. Tax is a terrible field to transfer to Israel. Because you could be an expert in U.S. tax law and has nothing to do with Israel. And if an Israeli company wants to know about U.S. taxes, they're going to hire an American law firm. There has no transferability. The other possibility is corporate law. That's another reason I chose Wild Gottschall, because Wild Gottschall had a burgeoning Israeli practice. And if I want to do corporate, I can perhaps join this Israeli practice and get really in and get a good job when I get to Israel. So I'm really, really torn. Corporate, though, is exactly why they called it Wild. They got you. They mangled you. It's a real sweatshop. But it's good for Israel. And it's a tznai in the Kiddushin. So what do? Answer, I punted. I asked them, I don't know what I want to do, tax or corporate, can you let me do some time in both so I can see what I like better? They say, okay, you can do 9 months in tax, 9 months in corporate, then you have to decide. I do 9 months in tax, I like the work, I like the people, hours are not so crazy, leave the office usually by 9 o'clock at night, and not so crazy. Okay, good. That's the tax department. Then I go 9 months in corporate. 9 months in corporate, the reputation was 100% true. I remember vividly, November to the end of the year, 1992. Vividly. I'm on a deal, a collateralized mortgage obligation offering by Prudential. $2.3 billion, T4, and for that 6 weeks from Thanksgiving to the end of the year, I did not get home to my house ever, one single day before 3 a.m. At least three or four times, I had to have a friend from the neighborhood bring me my tefillin, or bring tefillin for me, and if it wasn't for Shabbos, it would have been 7 days a week. But Shabbos was my rest. It was 6 days a week, Sundays as well. And at that point, I was not so into corporate, but corporate was so much better for Israel. I did my 9 months. Now I have to make a decision. And I am very, very anxious. Israel is corporate. Tax is what I want to do. So what do I do with that quandary? What do I do with that dilemma? I'll tell you what I did. I called my Rebbe. My Shana Aleph Rebbe in Yeshiva, I called him up. And I told him about my dilemma, and I asked him for advice. And he told me, and it was great advice. He said, you cannot do something you don't enjoy doing. Even if it's going to be bad for Israel to do tax, if you don't enjoy corporate, you can't do corporate. So I would suggest, you know, Hashem will take care of it, he'll figure it out, but don't do corporate if you don't like it. And you know what? Pretty sound advice. I did tax and spent the next 3.5, 4 years being a tax lawyer at Wild Gottschall. Guess what happened? My daughter, who was born a little while earlier, is going into first grade. So fast forward, it's time to make Aliyah. Good? Good. Now, in the interim, we're living in Passaic, New Jersey. And there is a new Rav in Passaic, New Jersey. He gave shiur in his house for a while, once a week. He was a maggid shiur in a place called Yeshiva University. And he gave a weekly shiur in his house, which one of my friends said, come Sunday night shiur in the house. I went to the shiur once, and I was blown away. Went the next week, I said, maybe that first week was a fluke. It was no fluke. Blown away, blown away, blown away every single time. And I became a passionate chassid, even though I'm not a chassid, of Rav Yonason Sacks. And he became the Rav in the Agudas Yisrael Passaic Park. And then I would go ahead and hound him, follow him, hear every single shiur he had to say into the community, and would walk across town many, many times a Shabbos, Sundays, to hear his talk. And I was I was into it. I was into it. And I was working 12 hours a day as a lawyer, but any free moment that I had available, I was drawn to the sweetness and magnificence of his book. I was very inspired. I was juiced. And then it was time to make Aliyah. And to be perfectly honest, it was the right thing to do. It was the deal, and it was the right thing to do, and I wanted to, but I was torn. Because here I was, extremely inspired by my Rebbe, on a spiritual high, even though I was working 12 hours a day as an attorney. And I was just, couldn't bear the idea I'm going to leave Rebbe. So I had this idea. We put away a little bit of money, not so much, but a little. And the thought was, I do not want to work in a Tel Aviv law firm, although that was the plan. I would love to take a year off to learn. At this time, I had 1, 2, 3 kids, and take a year off to learn. I spoke to the Aliyah people, pre-Nefesh, b'Nefesh. I said, I want to take a year off. What do you think? And they said unequivocally, that is a terrible idea. Why would you do that? You have a job, it's not easy, and bad idea. You're going to get stale, bad idea. I didn't listen to him. I decided, I'm going to ask my Rebbe. So I went, I'll never forget. I went to Passaic, where I lived, 314 Howard Avenue, to Rabbi Sachs' house. Sat down. My wife was there as well. And I told him the plan. And I told him I want to take a year off to learn. And I told him all the Aliyah people say this is a terrible idea. He looks at my wife. Says, are you okay with this? And my wife says she's okay with it. So Rabbi Sachs unequivocally says, go for it. Do it. 1 year off, do it. And then you'll figure out the law stuff after that. So, then we start talking about which yeshiva, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I call my other Rebbe. He happens to be the Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva called Shaarei Mevaseret Zion. And he says there's a nice kolel in our yeshiva, an Israeli kolel. You can learn there. You can be involved in the yeshiva. Maybe it's a good idea. And now all of a sudden, I'm very, very excited about our Aliyah. Because I get to now spend a year sitting and learning. That's exactly what I did. 1995, I took a year off to learn. And was very, very inspired. Something, and this all goes back to Shana Aleph. I want to emphasize that, but it all goes back to Shana Aleph. Because something inside of me stirred me to always wanted to bring me back to the Beis Medrash. Whether it's after law school, a year off. After Aliyah, a year off. Something always drew me back to the Beis Medrash. Take a year off. April 15th, 1996. I had this crazy idea. It's a ridiculous idea. Trust me, a ridiculous idea. But I send an email to my old law firm. To Marty Pollack from Weil, Gotshal & Manges. And I ask him, how would you be interested in me coming back for the summer? And this is like a lark. No way he's going to say yes. And I'm waiting 3-4 days. Email comes back from Marty Pollack. I'm nervous to open it. And to my absolute shock and joy, he says, we'd love to have you, by all means. And so Shiva ends June something, June 7th, 8th. I get on a plane, and I join the firm. 16 weeks back in the firm, make some bank, and that enables me to stay Shana Ben. Stayed another year in Kol, another year learning. Flash forward to February 1997, sent another email to Marty, who's the head of the tax department at Weil, Gotshal, and asked him to come back for the summer. Says, by all means, love to have you. Go back, 16, 17 weeks, bank, gives me a third year in Kol. Third year in Kol. And like, now I just want to tell you, this would have never, ever, ever happened if I was in the corporate department. There's no way in the nature of corporate work is, it tax, you have discrete assignments, you can do assignment for a week or two or three. Corporate deals take a long time, it's not discrete, and you need to churn out a lot of paper, it's not shy. It only happened because of tax. Not shy from corporate at all. Okay, next. We're back in 98. I sent an email to Marty Pollack again, February. Looking to come back for the summer. Might as well. This is working out pretty well. And 3 days go by, 4 days go by, 7 days go by, nothing. I'm getting nervous. It looks like my learning career is about to end. 8 days go by, I send another email, just checking in. Finally, I get the email back. We'd love to have you. But I'm curious, like what happened? A little slow on the response. Not like Marty. Go back, bank, end of the summer. Third summer, end of the summer. There's a guy in the firm, partner in the tax department, a very frum fellow. We'll call him Levy. He went by Larry, but we'll call him Levy. Wears black racing stripes, tzitzis, frum guy, long beard, big Talmud Chacham, who's a genius. And at some point at the end of the summer, he calls me in. He says, I just want to tell you, Marty took some time getting back to you. This time. Right? I said, yes. He goes, you want to know why? I said, yeah, I'll know why. And he explains to me. He says, they were going to let you go. The whole reason they brought you back was they assumed that this Israel thing, they liked you when you were working there. They liked you. And they assumed this Israel thing would be a fad. And you'd get over it. And you'd be back in New York soon enough. And they thought, like, okay, we'll keep a kesher with him over the summers, and then eventually get out of his system, he'll come back. But once they realized you were just milking the firm for these summers, and you had no intention of coming back, they basically said, game over. We don't do this. They don't hire people for the summer. It just doesn't happen. So I said, why they bring me back now? He goes, well, this is actually someone some of you know. It was a person who worked in the firm, in the tax department, from guy, who literally days in between when I sent the email and before he sent back to me, he gave notice to the firm saying he's leaving. He's leaving the firm in May. So basically, the way it timed out, this senior guy's leaving. Instead of having them pressure to go ahead and find someone to replace him, they brought me in for another summer that would buy them some time to go ahead and hire someone else. So the timing kind of just worked out. That was my third summer. And at the end of that summer, Marty calls me and he says, it's been good. It's been real. Have a nice life. And that was the end of that. So now I think I'm really enjoying my learning. I'm teaching in Mevaseret. I'm getting advancing myself. Maybe a morning state of shir is on the horizon. Good things are happening. And I do not want to practice law in Tel Aviv. That's for sure. But I need money. Ha'olam omed al shlosha dvarim, as my father likes to say. Kesef and the other two don't count. As my father likes to say. Anyway, so what's going to be? This is a long story. I'm nowhere near finished. Maybe I'll continue next week. Anyway, I'm without a job. Okay, but I'm learning. I got my fourth year, steiging away. First two times since I'm in Israel, we decided to go to America for Pesach. Twice it happened. This was this Pesach. We decide we're going to America for Pesach, some family reasons, whatever, we go to America for Pesach. And it's a couple of 4 or 5 days before Pesach, and we're in the five towns. Family, my wife, kids, five towns, and we need lunch. How many restaurants are there in the Central Avenue kind of area?
A lot.
30, 40?
No, it's
30? Anyway, a lot of restaurants. Could have gone to any one of these restaurants, but I'm a colo guy, not making a lot of money, trying to save money. And we decided we're going to do pizza. Good. How many pizza stores are there on Central Avenue?
Four
or five. Okay. So, whatever it is, we went to, at the time, it's now closed, called the Pizza Cave. We walk in there, and lo and behold, I'm teaching at MMY, actually, at the time. One of my students, MMY's father, is in the store. Happens to be, just when we're there. Happens to be a partner in a law firm. Happens to know me because he met his daughter during the year, sat in my class. Happens to ask me, going back to Wild Gotchel this summer? I said, actually not. He goes, you're a tax lawyer, right? I say, yes. He goes, well, maybe you'll join and come to my firm for the summer. Send me a resume, I'll speak to my people. I said, I will do just that. I send him my resume, I have an interview with him, and sure enough, they hire me for the summer. And that's summer number 4. That enabled me to spend another year. And basically, I did that. I went to that firm, Curtis Millay, for 3 more summers. 3 summers in that firm, and by now I'm a morning rebbe here, and I'm like enjoying myself and steiging and doing nice things, and also trying to support my family. Trying to support a family. Okay, good. Where am I going with this? There's a point to this. There is a point to this. There is a point to this. Ah. So my duration in these places is I do 3 summers, because then they realize I'm really stale. Like, I don't know how to be a lawyer anymore. Like, you have to be living it to really be doing it well. I'm not doing it well anymore. They chop that. And they basically tell me, okay, after 3 summers, it's time to move on. So they move me on. That's it. But by then, I'm like, I'm already a Rebbe. Like, this is like, I got smicha, I'm a Rebbe. But, you know, it's nice to make some money in the summers. Who doesn't like to make money in the summers? So, but I think I'm done. I'm ready to, like, to retire from the law until my first Talmud asks me to become Mesader Kiddush in his wedding. This is June, summer number 7. I don't have a job. But I'm in the States in June for his wedding. And you know what? I pick up randomly the New York Law Journal, which is a law journal. Back page has advertisements. I randomly call 2 or 3 headhunters, job placement people. And I say, I'm looking for work. They say, full-time? I say, no, for the summer. They say, we don't do that. I said, well, okay, but take my number anyway. 2 days later, I get a phone call. Someone wants to meet you. I go to a firm. They meet me. They want me full-time. I said, no. They say, okay, we'll take you for the summer. And basically, another summer works out. And I ended up doing that for a couple of summers. Not important. The point being, now, there is a point. Here's the point. The point being, there's a couple of points. But there is the point is as follows. First of all, the most important point I want to share is if a person, my years in Eretz Yisrael, my yeshiva years, I'm now 55 years old. And yes, I spent time in the corporate world. But my yeshiva years defined who I was as a lawyer, defined who I was in YU, defined who I was afterwards, defined who I was the whole way through. And something about my yeshiva experience just was indeed transformative. It set my priorities. It set my relationships with my rabbeim, who I consulted with on important decisions in my life. And it became who I was. And when it became time to go ahead and choose communities to live in, and there were options, I always chose communities that had shuls that were like yeshivas. Something always drew me back to a Beis Medrash. Whether it's a Beis Medrash in Israel, Beis Medrash in the community, something always pulled me back, and it goes back to when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. And in my opinion, that is the message of Yaakov Avinu. Is Yaakov Avinu, in his formative years, when he was young, when he was building his core identity, he was Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. And because of those years in the Beis Medrash, that informed everything that happened later. And yes, I'm no Yaakov Avinu, it's not my point. But I share this story with you because if you go ahead, and I had a lot of siyata d'shmaya, like there's no doubt in my mind that if I think about the number of coincidences, when this was going on for me, those first 7, 8 years, people knew me who I never met in my life. Like I became an unintended hero because, oh, you're the guy who goes back for the summers and is learning in Kollel? That's like there's one guy in the world who was that guy. How do I do that? How can I plan that? And the answer is you can't. That's not something, it was totally not derech hateva. Tax corporate, I should have done corporate. Rebbe said do tax, only worked out because I did tax. It didn't have to happen that way, but it did. And that set a process in motion. Happened to be that person left a job when I wanted to, when I sent that email, happened to work out just that way. Happened to go to the pizza cave as that, one of 25 restaurants, 5 pizza stores, that's the one I went into. Happens to be that Tom had got married at that point in time. Happened to be that I called that headhunter and something worked out. I totally felt the whole way through a siyata d'shmaya, the hand of Hashem kind of guiding me, and it all goes back to the idea of Yaakov Ish Tam Yosef Olin. Okay, I didn't want to spend as much time. I want to get to another quick thought, but it's related. I'm holding in my hands a fantastic book. Highly recommended. The book is called Ben Torah for Life. And this book is not written for us, for our community. It's written for a more yeshivish community, where the standard in the yeshivish community, the Haredi community, is learning Kollel for many, many, many years. And then when you can't anymore, and you're forced to work, and you have to work, nebuch, so now go out to work. And this book is written for those people who kind of feel like a second-class citizen, because they have to go out to work. In our community, you know second-class citizen if you go out to work, it's 100%, and it's correct, lechatchila, to go out to work, to support a family, to take care of your family. It's 100% lechatchila. But nevertheless, the messages of this book are profound and very significant. I just want to share one with you, and then I will close. He speaks about Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi, of all Klal Yisrael, you have Yud Beis Shvatim. And Zvulun were seamen, worked in ships and the like. And Yisachar was a learner, and different Shvatim had different tasks. But Shevet Levi was exclusively focused on serving Hashem. That was Shevet Levi, 100% serving Hashem. And that was their job. And the community supports Shevet Levi with Shumos and Maestros. And that's what Shevet Levi is about. And you need 1/12 of your community that is focused on Talmud Torah, focused on serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the role of Shevet Levi. Rav Lopiansky suggests, however, that's true on a national level for Klal Yisrael. But every single Jew has a Shevet Levi stage of his life. And his yeshiva years, whether they are 10, 1, or 2, doesn't make a difference, has a Shevet Levi stage of his life, where he is focused exclusively and solitarily on his Avodas Hashem. He's working on his learning. He's working on his relation with the Ribono Shel Olam and building himself in that fashion. There's a Shevet Levi stage of life. And just like in the Shvatim themselves, Shevet Levi informs the entire nation. The Shevet Levi years of your life will and ought to inform every future part of your life. And when you will make decisions about what career to choose, what girl to marry, how to allocate your balances in life, a high-powered job versus a chavrusa, all of those decisions get informed by the Shevet Levi stage of your life. And that carries its way through to the rest of our lives. That is the stratum, that is the core of our being. Even if we're going to go out as a lechatchila to the workplace and support our families, but that does not diminish one iota. On the contrary, it requires us, therefore, to be even more singular focused in these yeshiva years on being a Ben Torah and being focused on Avodas Hashem, so that when we leave yeshiva, the decisions that we make are made with the proper sense of hashkafa. The yeshiva experience, and I quote, does not, nor is it meant to prepare us in the practical sense for the next phase of life. Rather, the values committed in the yeshiva phase are primary. A foundation of a building is not designed to look like the building architecturally. It is there to be the bedrock to build on. And that is what your yeshiva years are all about. So, I share with that story with you. Again, I have much more to share, but I'm not going to right now. I want to hear from others. But I share with you that story because I want to just personalize it a little bit. Because for me, my yeshiva years in Eretz Yisrael and in YU were the Shevet Levi years of my life that informed everything that happened. And I was able to tap into a Rabbi Yonason Sacks as a Bala Bas, working 12 hours a day, but still growing religiously in learning because I had a Rebbe. And yes, something drew me back to the Beis Medrash, back to Eretz Yisrael. Ultimately, yeah, I couldn't get out of my system to the point that I get to have my 26th, 27th Shana Aleph once again. And there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. So I will just close with giving you the bracha, the ultimate bracha. And it's the bracha that you should understand your role as Levian. Not for life. You might not be Levian for life, but you're Levian right now. You're Levian this year, next year, Be'ez Hashem, in your college years where you'll also be in yeshiva. You're Levian right now, and to go ahead and tap into what Levi means. To tap into what it means to be a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and go ahead and build yourself, and thereby build those around you, so Be'ez Hashem, you can be, as Rav Lopiansky calls it, a Ben Torah for life.